The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello and welcome to the Inside Elland Road podcast with myself, Joe Donoghue, and the YEP's chief football writer, Graeme Smith. Leeds are on a roll again, and it feels like every time we say that here, that roll comes to an end in their next fixture. So feel free to blame the pair of us if the team return across the Pennines without the 3 points in tow on Saturday afternoon. Mostly blame Graeme, though, because he is the more senior pair of us and should know better. 5 wins out of the last six, though, the Championship's form team, a mostly clean bill of health, and we're gearing up for a really busy festive fixture schedule. Then it's January and the reopening of the transfer window. No rest for the wicked, eh? Before we get into dissecting that crazy win against Borough, or at least a crazy first half, Graeme, it's December the 6th, so it's only right that I ask the YAP's resident Ebenezer Scrooge, what is your favourite and least favourite thing about Christmas?
The favourite is very, very easy. Christmas dinner. I can't talk about Christmas dinner without almost welling up because I'm so passionate about it. It is my thing, Christmas dinner, every year. Best dinner of the year by country mile. It's got everything you could ever want and more. And it's just a festival of greed. So I'm very much into it. Least favourite? Probably people who don't get into the Christmas spirit. People who like say that you shouldn't have your tree up already. They trot out these things about, oh, the 12 days of Christmas, absolute nonsense. Just it's Christmas now. As soon as Halloween's over with, you know, I'm ready. You could start the fire the pistol at any time for me. And I'm there because you can get the mince pies out, can't you? That's one piece of advice I would give to the 49ers would be to get the mince pies out between now and Christmas at Elland Road. And you'll notice a dramatic uplift in atmosphere and general happiness around the club. People will spend more money in the club shop because they've had a mince pie that day, especially if they're good mince pies with very, very decent pastry with no dairy in. So, a bit of advice there for Parag, if he's listening.
With a little Leeds United crest sort of roasted onto the top.
Embossed, yeah, kind of like embossed. I remember being absolutely taken as a child when I went to Ibrox and I had a pie that had the Rangers badge kind of in embossed in the crust of the pastry. I just thought that was magic, like absolute wizardry, baking wizardry. So something like that, yeah, with the, you know, you could even have one of the old school badges, you know, on the mince pie for those who prefer the smiley badge or... sometimes I think we should work in marketing for a massive football club, Joe. We're just an ideas factory.
Look, again, if Parag is listening, I'm sure that he's recommended us to the new executive. Is he chief executive, chief operating officer, Murray, yeah, Eisenberg?
Chief operating officer.
If Murray is listening, and we know that Larry Nance Jr., that he does tune in from time to time. You know, if you want to get us out of this journalism gig, then marketing might be the calling. But speaking of marketing, I've just had a bit of a brainwave there, and it does tie into the Christmas theme that we've began this week's episode with. You're talking about the Leeds United crest embossed onto the crust of a pastry. Now, I don't think I've seen as much Leeds United merch as I did in the 1:30 Christmas advert that the club put out last week. That was an absolute spectacle in product placement, wasn't it? It was just, I mean, we can get into the nuts and bolts of it. And it's a really nice, it's very John Lewis-y. It's meant to be very heartwarming. But I honestly could not get over just how much Leeds merch there was all over the place.
I have some questions.
Go on.
I have my clipboard out. Number one. Did Eddie Gray pay for that bauble before he gave it to the child? Did he pay before? Did he pay after? Does he get, as I think would be fitting, an allowance in the club shop to just go and just go and lift whatever he likes. You know, you can take whatever per year. I don't imagine that it's a scenario that unfolded for a certain former Chelsea defender and his mother and mother-in-law. Remember that story? I can't remember the exact outcome because I think there might have been a court case. And because I can't remember, I don't want to stray into, you know. So we'll talk about that again afterwards, but people will know. I'm sure people will know. I'd like to know if Eddie has to pay for the bauble or if he has shoplifted it, which would be tremendous. We know that the 49ers wanted to raise the headcount quite dramatically at Elland Road, and now we're starting to see some of those issues because players are having to fill in for shifts at the club shop. How much is Archie Gray getting paid per hour working there? Because I know that under-18s are not getting a great deal at the minute when it comes to getting paid in shops. My other questions would be, did she really fall out of love with her football club between September of going to uni and coming home at the end of the first term in December?
Well, it depends what year this is, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, if it was this season, then, you know, that's scandalous. But if no it was excuse. Last season,
yeah, you know, yeah, maybe yeah, can yeah. Last season, we can, you know, she's probably just had enough if it was last season. I was slightly confused by the plot. You know, why is she turned her back on Leeds United so suddenly, so quickly and so brutally?
It seemed really sour, didn't it? The way that she sort of treated her little brother.
Yeah. Like she turned, she's gone away and become a different person instantly. Now I know that for those of us who did go away to university, it's a chance for a fresh start. You can be whoever you want to be. Maybe she's decided to identify as not a Leeds United fan, and perhaps we're looking too deeply into it. I don't know, but yeah, that struck me as slightly strange. And then she came home. She's had a road to Damascus moment, and she's had her eyes opened, and she's come home wearing the Leeds United shirt. And it almost feels like Eddie Gray has done some sort of magic with that bauble. The bauble's gone on the tree, and it's fixed Christmas. That's what I think the message is, that those baubles, so whatever problem you're having in your life right now, and some people will be going through some difficulties, I'm sure, perhaps a bauble from the Leeds United shop on your tree will fix it. I think that was the specific message of the Leeds United advert.
Yeah, I think the message is, if you do see Eddie in the club shop, then, you know, keep an eye on him. just make sure, you know, if he's got that, if he's got his eye on some of the better looking training wear, then, you know, just make sure when he leaves the shop that he's not, you know, stuffed some into his pockets or something.
Still got that poacher's instinct, though, hasn't he?
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, he's just he knows exactly where to find a goal. No, I actually think if you've done as much for this club as Eddie Gray has, you should be able to go into the club shop and take whatever you want.
100%.
Because, I mean, it's basically all his anyway, isn't it?
Well, the club is standing on the shoulders of men like Eddie Gray. So those garish ice hockey tops that they brought out, the Leeds United ice hockey tops, if he wants to cut about in one of those, then, you know, the world's his oyster.
What would you rather be seen in? The jumper that our esteemed colleague Phil and former host of this podcast was wearing as part of the Square Balls merch or Christmas merch, or that, as you put it, garish ice hockey top?
Probably the Lowfields tile design. I have to admit, I really like it. And maybe it was the model, you know, as much as it was the, when you see someone, you know, who resembles you, it's great to have a bit of representation for the balding white journalist in the modeling world. So when you see someone that, you know, doesn't look a million miles off what you look like, looking so good in one of those, then it does trigger a certain feeling. I think the Square Ball have got it pretty spot on with their merch over the last couple of years. Those Admiral shirts, Glasgow Rangers had a white Admiral away shirt that was very, very similar to the one they produced for the Square Ball, the Leeds one, the white with the blue and the yellow in the collar, the V-neck collar. yeah, really, really nice. No, ice hockey shirts are something I might have worn at university, you know, 2001, but those would have been genuine ice hockey shirts rather than kind of a crossover. Always been a bit wary of, you know, like people would have worn like heavy metal bands on an ice hockey jersey, that kind of thing, or baseball jersey. Always been a bit squeamish about those.
You did manage to squeeze it in, but in the first 10 minutes of this week's episode, you have mentioned Glasgow Rangers twice. So I think it's probably best that we do move on to more Leeds United matters, other than you know, merchandising and marketing opportunities and shoplifting. And we can talk about last weekend's win over Middlesbrough, because we haven't heard from Daniel Farke yet at the time that we're recording, ahead of this weekend's game against Blackburn. So we will have to go through the Borough game. And I mean, there was plenty to discuss, plenty to cover, especially in that first half. The coffee man giving Borough the lead, Emmanuel Latte Lat, who I can't say I've heard of or had heard of before, but certainly made an impact at Elland Road. But then it felt like Groundhog Day, didn't it? You know, the opposition go 1-0 up, and then within 90 seconds, they're back on level terms. But this time went even one better with two headers from probably the two smallest men on the pitch. It was, it was a real, I don't know, what would you describe it? It was a whirlwind start, wasn't it?
It was a festive treat, the first half. It was superb, absolutely brilliant value. Archie, probably a little tired from all the shifts in the club shop, gets turned uncharacteristically easily, you have to say, because he has done a really good job at right back, against some really tricky players as well. But what struck me straight away was Borough's insistence on playing out from the back and taking risks. You know, the little passing triangles in their own area to try and unlock leads. The first time they tried it, and they tried the switch out to the left, Archie Gray read it really well. The second time, they played it, you know, perfectly, Borough, and they managed to escape the press, and they were away. And then Gray got turned, and Melier got beat at his near post. We always talk about goalkeepers getting beaten at their near post as if it's a cardinal sin. That was a really well-struck shot. I'm not a goalkeeper. I can't say how difficult that would have been to save, or even if he was onsided. But maybe it's just our conditioning that when we see somebody score at the near post, we think, oh, you should never be beaten at your near post. So I don't claim to be an expert on goalkeeping, so I can't really say if he was massively at fault. But Leeds in general could look at that goal and see some areas for improvement, you know, little details, I suppose, maybe in the press. And then Archie, I suppose, he gets turned really quite easily. But the response in the last two games to go in a goal behind so early has been absolutely spot on. Melier said something in the programme for Saturday's game about knowing that with that amount of time left on the clock, this was against Swansea, and knowing that the quality they have in the team, they knew that they could get back into it. So there's almost like a we don't need to panic here sense about the side. And that's for good reason, because you know that Leeds are going to create chances and probably score goals, especially at home. Unbeaten at home so far this season. And yeah, I think we all knew that that wasn't the end of it when Borough went a goal up. It just potentially could have made life more challenging. And you always say when a team comes to Elland Road, oh, you don't want to let them get the early goal because then they've got something to defend and they might just sit in, dig in and try and make it difficult. But Leeds have just instantly, you know, ripped that advantage right out from under their feet with a, you know, a goal within, what, 2-3 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Four minutes?
There was still 6 minutes on the clock by the time that it was 2-1, by the time Cree headed in the second. And it is that never say die attitude, isn't it? Which, you know, you've always been wanting to see, but hasn't always manifested at Elland Road over the past few years. This season, it really has. And I'm gonna come up with a bit of a stat attack for you very early on in the pod, Graham. Do you know which team have recorded the most points after going behind in games this season in the Championship?
Oh, let me guess. Might it be Leeds United, Joe?
It is Leeds United, obviously helped by those two recent results against Swansea and Borough. But can you tell me how many points have been gained after conceding first?
14.
Yeah, it is actually. Do you know that?
Yeah, I saw Opta tweeted it after the game.
Oh, great. I didn't see that.
He went counting. you went and did the math. Yeah. You went and had a look. Opta tweeted it. That is quite a remarkable statistic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe on one hand, if you're the Grinch, then you'd say, start better, Leeds United. But if you're Santa, you'd say you're on the nice list because you've managed to overcome adversity routinely. That is a really, really good stat. It bodes very, very well for this team and their composure and their mentality and the general not disappearing, you know, within themselves whenever going gets tough.
I have another stat for you if you'd like to hear it.
Go on.
I promise you it is worthwhile. Blackburn, this weekend's opponents, right? They've conceded 7 goals at Ewood Park this season after the 75th minute, which is the joint highest in the league.
So does that speak to a fitness issue, Joe? Is it a concentration issue? I mean, I want to drill down into the numbers like an infuriated Theo Pathetis on Dragon's Den and get to the heart of this. Why are they shipping so many late goals?
Or an infuriated Gary Neville, as he will be on Dragon's Den now. I think it could be a fitness issue. They had Sammy Smodix, the striker who's got 14 this season. He was talking after the loss against Sheffield Wednesday last weekend about how the team are tired and they're hurting because I think they've got 9 senior players out injured at the moment. Tyrese Dolan's the most recent one. He's out for 2 months with a knee injury, so he won't play this weekend. Arna Sigurdsson, I believe he's Icelandic forward, second top goal scorer with 4 goals. He's also injured, or he was out last weekend and is a doubt for this weekend's game. Could be a fitness issue, could be a concentration issue. I don't know what it is. I mean, they've just not been very good at home at Blackburn, which is, you know, obviously a complete far cry from what Leeds have been at Elland Road. So it'll make for an interesting game. I mean, we'll hold off on the Blackburn pretty much stuff for now because you mentioned if you were Santa, then Leeds would be on the nice list. Do you think what do you think Daniel Farke has on his Christmas list?
Maybe a couple of nice bottles of wine to enjoy on his sofa with his cake. Maybe a recipe book for cake. Maybe a new coat, a new Farke Parker to wear on the touchline. I see him as being quite minimalist, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
A man maybe with a timeless kitchen.
Yeah, maybe a strong table for dancing on at the end of the season, mm-hmm. and some dancing shoes, obviously. Beyond that, I struggle to know what he'd like. I think, like all dads, he'd be impossible to buy for, wouldn't he?
Yeah, okay, that's a good way of putting it. I actually do think that some of the Elland Road predecessors in the manager's office might have been a bit easier to buy for. I don't know, a new Apple Watch for Jesse Marsh or something. Some new sneakers. You could really see him really enjoying that, or some new fancy specs for when he's doing some very ponderous reading glasses shots. Some special cheeses. I could see that. Do you think? What do you think Daniel Farke's favorite element to the Christmas dinner is?
That's a really good question. Probably the ham. I think he'd probably like a good ham.
A ham, like a Black Forest ham. Southern German.
Yeah, perhaps. Victor Orta was partial to that.
This is the real quiz. Is he Yorkshire puddings on Christmas dinner, man? Or is that sacrilege? And then more to the point, are you?
I am... It's a broad church Christmas for me, and because now and again at Christmas we've because our family has kind of grown and extended family and whatnot, and people get married and et cetera, kind of other families' cultures kind of, I wouldn't say they invade your own. I'm not going to Suella Braverman it, but I would say that they infuse your own Christmas dinner culture. So if somebody was to say, I would really like Yorkshire's, then I'd say, that's absolutely fine. If I can have my carrot and parsnip mash, you can have your Yorkshires. That's not a problem for me.
I'm reeling from the prospect of carrot and parsnip mash. That's sacrilege.
No, it's incredible.
No, you need a really milky, just classic mash. I know you can't have that, but
you can't, just not with cow's poison.
Cow's poison, right?
Can we get back to discussing Borough, perchance?
Yes, we can. Yeah. Well, I'm keeping with the Christmas theme. There'll be a little bit of Christmas chat all the way up. You said that one of your pet peeves was people who don't get in the Christmas spirit. So I'm just rolling with the punches.
I feel a bit like Santa trying to hold back Rudolph on his first outing here. You know, you're just so keen to deliver presents. What did I like about the Borough performance? I liked that Farka liked that the two players who scored headers were tiny men, in tiny Daniel James and almost equally tiny Cree Somerville. And he described it as desperately greedy. That was the kind of phrase he used for Leeds United's desire and hunger to get on the score sheet. If you're a defender, you have to be asking yourself, do I even deserve to have a Christmas if Daniel James has scored a header at the back post? That is sacrilege. I dare say that Michael Carrick might have had his defenders working on defending crosses this week, but a really, really impressive response from Leeds. And Daniel James, again, with the end product. You cannot take the man out of the team right now because he's just scoring constantly. Scores in every game, it feels like.
I think it's six in a row now.
Joint top scorer now, isn't he?
At Elland Road. Yeah.
Has he got eight?
No, he's got six. He's got six goals. It's Somerville and Pirou who've got eight
of course,
each.
Yeah. He's flying, and so Somerville. So those wing positions are kind of locked down at the minute.
You've missed an absolute howler there. You could have said that Daniel Farka's favourite elves have scored. And also, can I just say how remarkably similar was that Dan James header to the one which he scored at Villa Park about two seasons ago, where he's sort of sandwiched between two defenders, but still manages to get up between them and head it in from close range. I felt very deja vu-esque. I was drafting a tweet in that moment. But then Leeds came forward again and Somerville scored. So I was like, we'll just tap away and we'll celebrate Crescencio Somerville's own header.
Yeah, James Rose, like the smoked salmon you have for a Christmas Day breakfast on bagels with cream cheese.
You're very middle class, aren't you, Graham?
Well, I think I've earned the right to eat something nice in my life, Joe, with all the hard work I do and the hundreds of children I have. And then even at 2-1, though, the game, it felt like momentum had shifted, obviously, but it certainly didn't feel like the game was done. You know, I thought Borough were really dangerous and played some nice stuff. Leeds locked them down for a little bit. And then the third goal felt really, really important. The penalty. And I have to say, I wasn't overly impressed with Darren England's overall performance. But I thought the spot for the penalty was absolutely superb because that was the sneakiest little ankle tap. I mean, that was a scrum half's challenge, you know, as a forward gets past him and is breaking into open space, just turning, falling to the ground and flicking out the hand to tap his ankles and bring him down. That's exactly what Clark did to Routere. And you have to feel a little bit for Clark because he's only just back from a long-term back injury and chucked in, probably wasn't expecting to be chucked in at Elland Road because they had Paddy McNair in there, but he goes off with what looked like a back injury. And then suddenly you're Bambi on ice on the edge of your own box, you're falling over, your ankle tapping Routere and it's a penalty. And England was right there and saw it. It was a really hard spot on the replays, actually, to see why Routere had gone down. And then we saw why Pirou will be taking the penalties, or Pirou, rather, will be taking the penalties this season.
That was an absolutely fantastic spot kick, wasn't it? It was just, there was no goalkeeper in world football saving that. You know, right into the corner of right into the side netting at a height which invites the goalkeeper to dive, but the power and the pace on it, the conviction and the strike really was of the highest order. So It adds a bit more color to Daniel Farke's quotes following the Bamford penalty miss at Stoke, doesn't it? You know, when he was so convincing with his, well, Joel is our penalty taker. I understand you now, Daniel, because he knows how to strike a ball.
Yeah. And another goal for him as well, which keeps the tally ticking over. And then even still at 3-1, you know, it's not done. And Borough get themselves another one back. I certainly wasn't expecting the second half to lack the same number of goals. I felt for sure that it was going to end up like 6-3, 5-3 to Leeds just because of the way the teams were playing. But it didn't turn out that way. And Farke was absolutely delighted with the second half performance because he felt that they stopped Borough from doing what they were doing first half and that they pressed better and just had more of a handle on things. But they probably could have scored, well, they definitely should have scored more goals themselves. Ruter, again, left his shooting boots in the staff changing room at the club shop, obviously, because, or maybe it's because he was playing in pointy elf shoes. But he did not fare well in front of goal. Missed a couple, didn't he? You know, there's one in the first half where he went through, went for kind of a controlled low finish, but didn't hit it half hard enough. And then the one where everyone in the stadium thinks he's got to be offside. Great ball from Ampadu, by the way. What an assist that would have been. Ruter is in behind, stunned that the play is going on. And he shoots like a man who thinks the flag is going up. But the flag didn't go up. Keeper makes a save. And a goal kick is the result. And the chance is gone. So it definitely could have been more comfortable. Could have been easier for Leeds. But Farke was... he was given an opportunity to kind of, not to lay into the team, but just to kind of speak about how much easier it could have been. And he declined, you know, he politely declined. I don't want to use the word defensive because you're not really facing any bullets after a 3-2 win at home and when you've won 7 on the trot at Elland Road. But he definitely wasn't in a mood to criticise his players after the game. And he was very, very pleased and proud of their performance and of the win over a tricky side. But it certainly wasn't an easy one.
No, it wasn't. But I think that's reflective of a team that arrived at Elland Road having won 10 of the last 15, I think. You know, this season, and we can talk about the atmosphere and the piece that you've written this morning, or went live this morning, that, you know, even for me, you know, turning up to Elland Road, there is this season a great deal, or at least a small amount of expectation now that Leeds will be able to see off whoever arrives. I mean, that will be really put to the test on the 23rd when Ipswich come. But, you know, you look at Borough's record since the beginning of the season. I mean, since, you know, ever since they got that little blip out of the way when they went 7 games without a win, they've been really good, and you can see why, because they're good problem solvers. The way that they were breaking the Leeds press with being able to play out from the back was impressive. They were confident on the ball. You know, they didn't have their strongest team out, but they were able to do it with the components that Michael Carrick had put on the pitch. And you can see that that's sort of the building blocks and the fundamentals for a team that will be, you know, in the top half this season. So I think... yeah, full credit to Leeds for still being able to carve out those opportunities. I think their expected goals tally for the game was over 3. So shows that they were good value for scoring 3 goals. Shows that they weren't just reliant on 2 early chances, a penalty, and then just sat back and were content with that result. And yeah, I mean, it's beating these sorts of teams. And we'll come on to this later because Blackburn and Sunderland are 2 teams, again, who are in the top half of the table. It's beating those sorts home and away that will ultimately lead to Leeds getting promotion or having to settle for the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And you can definitely build a promotion bid, a promotion charge on spectacular home form. Mm-hmm. And What's mad is to think that Leeds are still not top of the home points one table. You know, Ipswich have only dropped 1 game and 1 set of points, and that was to Leeds. They've won all the rest at home, so they're on 27 to Leeds 24. But Leeds haven't lost a single game at home, And it's no surprise, really, that the top three in the home form table are the top three in the actual table, the complete table. And it's quite a satisfactory footnote that Leeds have been the fly in the ointment for both Ipswich and for Leicester. But the longer you can stay on beaten at home, just turn it into a place where your players turn up thinking, we'll win today. You know, we'll win this game because that's what we do at home. And then away from home, you pick up enough points to keep the pressure on the top two. And Leeds will stay right up there. And I think it can all be kind of, it can all be built upon what they're doing at Elland Road, which Farke said in his first team meeting, he told the players he wanted to make it a fortress again after a couple of difficult years. But the atmosphere is definitely different this season. It's not as urgent as it was last season. And that's probably because the urgency isn't quite needed. It's not quite there. You know, what's on the pitch is more control, more likelihood of a win. So, and there's no real desperation in it. I think that'll come for the big, big games at home. I think Ipswich on the 23rd, I think the atmosphere will be fantastic that day. But there's definitely periods of the season so far where the game is, Leeds have had it under control. They've been passing the ball around, probing for openings, and it's gone a bit flat. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's a symptom of being a dominant team, though, don't you? I think it's very difficult to maintain. It's similar to maintaining complete dominance over a game, over 90 minutes, which is very rare, you know, that you don't give up any five-minute periods to the opposition. It's very rare to maintain almost South American-esque, you know, carnival atmosphere from minute one to minute 90. Now, Elland Road has done that in the past, but that's when, as you said, it's when it's more needed, it's when it's more necessary. And this season, that hasn't been the case. I think people have been, and to be honest, I don't think we're in any position to complain because, you know, the stress that people have no doubt been feeling on match days over the past couple of seasons, it's probably quite a nice feeling that that's dissipated, that you can sit back or stand and just relax and, you know, just think, okay, we've got this. You know, they've shown time and time again that, you know, even if we go 1-0 down, it's not game over. You know, that's not the be all and end all. So I think, you know, let people enjoy the game how they want to enjoy the game, Graham, right? Let's you know, let's not gatekeep here, or let's not tell individuals how they should be supporting the team. And so anyone who's watching on Shots TV, they'll have maybe over the past few minutes clocked that Graham has done his trademark yawn a couple of times, and he's really, really tried very hard to stifle it. And he's muted his mic so that we don't hear his yawns. But Graham, come on, it's okay. It's all right. Come back onto the screen.
I hate you. This is not why we won an internal company award, you know, because we're professional and we mask our flaws. The advent of
internal company award, which is right there.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
I should put mine behind me as well. The one that I beat you to. So they've got all this home form that is obviously fantastic. How big though are these two trips to Blackburn and Sunderland? I mean, given that the teams they're against, if they were to win both, you'd put yourself in a pretty spectacular position ahead of the busy festive period, wouldn't you?
I think you can probably categorize this as in the busy festive period because of how quickly these games come about. You know, the 9th of, I mean, it's an early kickoff, but I mean, it's not going to have that much of an impact on recovery. The 9th, then followed by the 12th, followed by the 16th. There's a lot of games coming up. I think you worked it out. There's 7 in the next 24 days, which is a lot of football, especially for those who've already played a lot of football this season, like your Archie Grays and your Ethan Ampadu's. These next two games in particular are going to be the real acid test, I think, because Sunderland and Blackburn probably will be in the conversation for the 5th and 6th position in the table come the end of the season. You know, teams who are going to be looking at the playoffs as a real aspirational goal for them. And due the respective circumstances as well makes them both quite interesting matchups, because I believe that John Dal Thomason, the Blackburn manager, will be serving a touchline ban this weekend, because I think he got sent off against Wednesday last weekend. And also with, you know, Sunderland parting company with Tony Mowbray, whether they'll have someone permanent in position by next Tuesday, is it? So Tuesday or Wednesday? I think it's Tuesday. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, that both of those aspects will have some sort of bearing on the game that, or the games that we witness. But again, Leeds away form hasn't been as consistent as their home form, naturally so. But taking 3 points from these two games, or to rather 6 points, that'd be a massive, massive statement going into, you know, some really, really big fixtures. And you want to be playing yourself into form before you take on Ipswich.
Yeah, just looking at that fixture list, I mean, this is a really hard month. Blackburn and Sunderland away are both really, really tricky games. Coventry at home, no gift, but perhaps without being disrespectful to Noel Whelan's old club, the easier of, on paper, the easier of the fixtures. Ipswich at home is massive. Preston and West Brom away is another kind of away, really tricky away doubleheader. So, you know, the more points you can get in this period, and I think the clearer the picture will be as to just how serious Leeds United are about this promotion push this season. I wouldn't say it was a defining month, because they're all defining months, Joe, but I think it's certainly a pivotal month.
Yeah, I agree. I think on January the 1st, I think we'll have a really, really good indication of Leeds' chances of automatic promotion, because either the gap between Leicester and Ipswich and Leeds will have opened up again, or it'll be really, really close. I don't see it being sort of this limbo territory, because of how many games there are, because of player fatigue, because of you know, a whole litany of reasons. I think that these next few games, one of the top three and four, if you want to count Southampton in that as well, who've been, you know, really playing themselves into contention, one of those teams will suffer a blip. There'll be some funny results in there, as there always is around the Christmas period. So Leeds just have to make sure that they maintain their levels of performance that they've shown so far this season, and make sure that it's not them.
Yeah, I'd agree. What will be interesting is to see if this 7 games in 24-day period tests Farke's squad depth to a more sterner degree. Because, yes, he's had to chop and change a little bit. He's had to find solutions. Well, since he's got his squad settled anyway, you know, he's had the injuries at centre-back. He's had the right-back situation to solve, and he's kind of gone with stuck Archie Gray there to solve it while Jed Spence has been out. But beyond that, it's been pretty settled, hasn't it? I mean, James and Somerville have been very, very regular. Ritter and Pirou have been very regular. Ampadu hasn't missed a minute. He's been Mr. Ever-Present. And Kamara's been really regular since he came in once Gray went to right-back. Rodon's played an awful lot of football. Melier hasn't missed a beat. And Byram's played a surprising amount of football for a man of that injury record. So Farke's not calling the shots around here. Farke hasn't had to change his starting lineup too much and too often. So what he's had to call on his squad for is legs, you know, and seeing out fixtures in the final 15, 20 minutes. He hasn't had to rely on them too much. So I wonder if we'll start to see in the next month Anthony starting maybe, Nyanto starting maybe, and the midfield is the most interesting bit for me. You know, if Ampadu, for whatever reason, cannot play, and his record over the last two seasons is good, the only time he's missed games in the last two seasons, league games, was through suspension. In his two seasons in Serie A, he didn't have any injuries that kept him out, and he started every game for which he was available last season for Spezia. So he has the kind of track record of playing a lot of football. But what happens if he can't?
Watch a lot of Italian football, do you, Graham?
I used to when it was on Channel 4 on Sunday afternoon.
Was Ethan Ampadu playing then?
No, slightly before. Slightly
is he before born?
His time. Probably not. I had Sensible Soccer on the probably it was, I don't know what the computer was, probably an Omega or Oracle or something. And then I had Channel 4 on the TV next to it, you know, watching the great Milan team or very good Juve team, etc., etc. I haven't really watched much Italian football since then, I have to admit. But I did look at Ethan Ampadu's record of the last 2 years for a piece that I'm writing. Because I'm interested to see what Farke does if he goes with, if Gruev is just a straight swap. We haven't seen a lot of him yet, but we know that his profile is probably closer to Ampadu's than it is Kamara's or Gray's. Or does he go with the two players that he has trusted a lot in Kamara and Gray and ask one of them to sit? The trust he places in Archie Gray is almost absolute, isn't it? Because he's been playing him at a position that Gray really hasn't got a lot of experience in, certainly no senior experience whatsoever prior to this season at right back. So Farke obviously really, really trusts him. But would he go with him and Kamara in the middle, or would he just stick Gruev in there as the more defensive one? What do you reckon?
The difficult games for Gruev to come into, though, don't you think?
All of them. Coventry at home, maybe.
I know, but I mean, you saw when he changed the lineup at Stoke, it just didn't click in the same way that he wanted it to. So I mean, it is an interesting prospect. I mean, he was signed for a reason, obviously, and yes, there may have been an expectation that, you know, Ampadu might not play every game as he has, and Gruev might have been able to ease his way in a little bit better. But you know, I don't think there's going to be many complaints if Gruev doesn't play as much and Leeds end up getting promoted. I mean, certainly not from the fans, but maybe from Gruev's side of things. But so far, I think he's seemed pretty content with, you know, the peripheral role that he's had, and just waiting and biding his time. I honestly don't know. I like everybody else, I haven't seen enough of Gruev to pass comment on his abilities to fill in for Ampadu. Is basically the answer that I'm going to have to give you.
You don't watch a lot. I suppose you don't watch a lot of European football. So
even I'm not watching Bulgarian internationals, Graham. Come on.
He played in the German top flight. Let's not be obtuse.
Not that often, though.
No.
And also, Werder Bremen, not a great team to watch. So
really?
Yeah.
Well, see that has made it. The fact that you know that, the fact that you know that Werder Bremen are not the great entertainers of the Bundesliga.
Well, the Bundesliga is just a lot more tactical. That's what it is. I mean, teams either score hatfuls of goals in games or they nullify each other. Lots of young coaches, lots of young, innovative, new ideas, and Farke Parkers, and, you know, interesting touchline attire.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Will you beep? Yeah.
I'll tell you what else we should talk about. The squad depth situation has changed in the last couple of days, hasn't it?
It has. That was very Davino of you.
With an unexpected call up to the Colombia squad for one Giancarlo Poveda.
Unexpected item in the bagging area, yeah.
Yes. Have to admit, didn't see that come in. And I know that it's not an official FIFA international window, so it's slightly different. And I think the profile of the Colombia squad will be significantly different. I think it's very much an experimental. What have we got lurking, you know, underneath the surface here? What have we got in terms of backup? Quite smart, really, from an international point of view. Not so clever from a Leeds United point of view, because this is a really important time of year. But without disrespecting the little man, possibly seen as expendable. Maybe Farke sees it as a chance for Poveda to go and get more match fitness, more game time, more exposure, more experience. And then he'll come back to Leeds in an even better fettle. Or maybe he just thinks, you know, he's probably only going to play a small role at best. So, yeah, it's we'll find out from Farke what his reasons were. But, I mean, as far as Poveda's concerned, it's probably happy days, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, gets to go and play some international football. I mean, the weather's probably quite nice in Bogota. right now. I mean, they get to play in the United States. So, yeah, nice change of scenery from the bench. And obviously opens up the opportunity to you know, the likes of Mateo Joseph, potentially Joe Gelhardt to get back on the bench, to be that sort of attacking replacement for Poveda's position in the squad. I mean, the thing that's really thought-provoking, shall we say, for me, is what does this mean for Poveda's future at Leeds? Because if he's expendable now, with 6 months or just over 6 months remaining on his contract, is this just a very, very slow goodbye? Is this a very slow, so long farewell?
The long goodbye. Potentially. I almost think if there was to be a new contract, we'd have heard of it by now. You know,
But then again, we haven't heard of one for Shaq's, and I think...
But he's also in that camp, isn't he? Where if promotion is achieved, does Shaq play any football at Leeds United next season? If promotion is achieved, does Jan Poveda play any football in the Premier League next season? Neither of them are playing a lot of football right now in the Championship. And when you go up a level, I would suggest it's going to be harder still, because Leeds will probably recruit. They'll definitely recruit, because they'll need to replace Anthony. You know, unless they bring Harrison back or Sinisterra. In both cases, I don't know if I can see that. Probably can see Harrison as a little more likely than Sinisterra, but I just don't know if, you know, if you're planning for promotion and nobody wants to count the chickens before they hatch, do you leave it until the last moment to look at those contracts and say, actually, yeah, we do want to keep you on? I mean, has Poveda shown enough? You know, I mean, he's played in the Championship for Blackburn, he's played in the Championship for Blackpool, and he's played in the Championship now, sparingly, admittedly, for Leeds. But has he done enough to say, I could be a Premier League player? There's undoubtedly a box of tricks there and bags of skill and pace. But has he done enough so far?
No, I think is the short answer. If you're looking at the pecking order at Leeds, you want to keep hold of Crescencio Somerville, you want to keep hold of Willy Nyonto. If possible, you want to keep hold of Jadon Anthony. And of course, Dan James is playing in the form of his life. He's not really getting a look in, is he? And when he did come on against Rotherham recently, he played through the middle. So, I mean, it's not a difficult decision, if you're asking me. And, you know, Daniel Farke is obviously... made the decision that yes, he is permitted to go and join up with this Colombia squad, not the Colombia squad, but a Colombia squad over the next couple of weeks. So he'll miss, just to bring everybody up to speed, he'll miss Blackburn, he'll miss Sunderland, and he'll miss Coventry at least. Might be back for Ipswich, but you know, he might not be in the, maybe it might be jet lagged or whatever. I don't know what Colombia's plans are after that. That final friendly on the 16th. But yeah, definitely Christmas. Those are the three games.
Christmas party, I would imagine.
Christmas party. Do you reckon that's what it'll be?
They might go out on Mad Friday. I don't know. I don't know how the Colombians do it.
I think Mad Friday might be a bit different in Medellin to what it is in Yorkshire, Graham.
Yeah, probably not as good. yeah, it'll be interesting. And I think, you know, staying closer to home, if you're Mateo Joseph, you are rubbing your hands and thinking, right, what am I going to do in training today to force the manager's hand to put me in? And because if a spot opens up, you've got to try and grab it, you know. And there's a few players that will be looking at that thinking, I want that spot. I want him to put me on the bench. And Joseph, I think, is the one that fans would probably most like to see, because he's still the big unknown, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, we've seen quite a lot of Gelhardt. Not enough, I would say, but we've seen quite a bit more of him than we've seen of Joseph. And everybody always wants to see the great unknown, because he's unspoiled, isn't he? People haven't made up their minds on him yet. I don't know, people are lightning quick to make up their minds on players, but I say, after writing off both Poveda and Shackleton in one breath earlier, but yeah, I think Joseph is the one that fans would probably get most excited about seeing. maybe come on for a minute or two just to see what he can get up to at championship level. Because obviously he's very, very good at under-21s level. We also know that the gap is enormous between the two, between under-21s and championship. So, yeah, let's see what he does. Be interesting.
Yeah. Before we finish then, a quick preview on Blackburn and Sunderland, because we won't have recorded another episode until after that Sunderland game next Tuesday. So we'll have double match reaction for you on the Inside Elland Road pod next week. Anyone in those teams that stands out for you that you think can potentially cause Leeds some problems?
Probably Henning Berg, very solid defender.
Colin Hendry, maybe?
Colin Hendry. I do quite like the look of Jason Wilcox.
Brett Emerton.
Brett Emerson Diaz, yeah. I mean, we could just go through and name.
I said Brett Emerton, not Ben Brereton Diaz.
Oh, you did, didn't you? How remiss of me. Shearer, Sutton. Who else was in that Blackburn
Tim
team?
Tim Flowers, Hansley Shovels.
Tim Flowers.
Who else
was in that?
Two guy, Kerimoglu.
Are you looking this up?
No. This is just, as you know me very well, Graham, this is just my brain at work.
Are you just naming any Blackburn player now?
Morten Gams Pedersen carries a threat. So,
was Morten Gams Pedersen the one that got the kidney punch from Joey Barton?
Joey Barton.
Shameful. Absolutely shameful.
He'll probably go on a podcast and say that he was, you know, Pedersen was making it all up despite the photographic evidence.
It's about the weight of evidence in the case.
To the contrary.
Yeah. I've always quite liked the Blackburn kit, I have to say. The blue and white halves. I've always thought I like it when a club sticks to its pattern, you know, as much as its colours. So I do like the Blackburn kit.
It's like a Lancashire Battenberg, isn't it?
Yes. If Smodics is out, then who, from your encyclopedic knowledge of football, who is going to be the big threat?
Well, I don't think Smodics is going to be out. I think he's fine.
That's a shame. So, I think it was just wishful thinking on my part.
Jot that down. Adam Wharton is sort of the big one. Blackburn Academy graduate. I think he's still only 19 or 20. He is what I would describe as this year's Alex Scott. You know how he went from Bristol City to Bournemouth over the summer. I'd say Adam Wharton is that type of player. He's in midfield and just has it. Aside from that, don't really have too many other players that I'd say of too much concern for Leeds.
You're not big into Lewis Travis or Niall Ennis, the football manager genius. Sam Gallagher.
No. Okay, maybe Andrew Moran, who I think is on loan from Brighton. That's usually a good indicator. If they're on loan from Brighton, it means they've usually got a bit. I think he's got quite a few assists this season. It's a Sunderland team. None of them. Jack Clark.
Jack Clark
obviously
has put together a fine season so far. I wonder if he'll be one of those who has a really, really good championship season and goes back to the Prem and maybe doesn't quite do it at first and goes back to the championship and smashes it, then goes back to the Prem and eventually finds that little extra thing or whatever he was missing to make it in the Premier League. You know, the way there are players that you would categorize as too good for the championship, not quite there for the Premier League, in the way that people unfairly said that Mitrovic was one of those. And then he went and did his thing in the Premier League. I wonder if Jack Clark will maybe bounce up and down again another time before finally making his home in the Premier League. Because everybody knows what Jack Clark is about. You know, Jack Clark is going to cut inside and shoot with his right foot. And yet, knowing what he's going to do, it seems almost irrelevant. You know, all those defenders, I've seen him do it before and yet failed to stop him from doing it again.
You know what I'd describe that sort of limbo as?
Go on.
Cameron Jerome territory.
Cameron Jerome.
It is. It's true. He always did it in the Championship, didn't he? But could never replicate it in the Premier League. Just a couple of clubs, didn't he? I think he was at Birmingham, Norwich. Was he at West Brom as well? I don't know.
Yes, might have been.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. And it does make a lot of sense. Aside from Jack Clark, who else in that Sunderland team?
Niall Huggins. Niall Huggins might put one in the top corner.
He does have a shot on him. Yeah.
Is it Luke 09?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has the face of a 14-year-old, always.
He does, yeah.
Even though he's been around for a bit. Daniel Ballard, very good Northern Irish defender. Mm. Trey Hume, also very good Northern Irish defender.
Is he not called Trey?
What did I say?
Try.
Yeah.
Don't even know your own internationals.
No, he's very young. I will know him when he's played 50 games, all right?
It's like me talking about Langdon Dykes.
Joe Bellingham. Now, there's a name.
He's
exactly like his brother as well, isn't he? Like his face. He's got his brother's face.
It's almost like they're related.
It's almost like they're related. And if he has half his brother's talent, he'll be a problem.
Did you know something?
Chris Rigg. He is actually only about 14.
He's a baby. Yeah, he was at the under 17 World Cup with England. Got eliminated by Uzbekistan.
Eliminated. That's a very definitive word to use.
There was a great incident at the end of that game. Actually, I'm going to bore everyone here, but the Uzbekistan.
Hang on. Let me guess. The coach of Azerbaijan.
I've just given you the country, and you've got it wrong.
He booted the
ball
away.
Sorry to all of our Uzbek listeners.
I concentrated mostly on Mali and their amazing attacking lineup in that under-17s World Cup. The coach booted the ball away to stop England from playing quickly when they needed a goal, and created a great big. He got sent off and created a big stramash, a big brouhaha at the full time whistle. Fantastic.
Well, I was going to describe it better than that, but yeah, that's essentially the long and short of it.
Completely ruined Chris Rigg,
yeah, was there. But back to Job Bellingham. So obviously Jude is in Madrid, and Jude and Job's mother, Bellingham, lives in Madrid with Jude, and the father, Mark, I believe he's called, he lives in Sunderland with Job. I wonder how they came to that.
Rocks his paper. Maybe they're going to do it 6 months about. Because I am pleased, though, that you said that at least one of the parents lives in Sunderland, because you could foresee a scenario arising where he'd be on the phone to them, you know, it'd be their family Zoom call again, and he'd be saying, "Oh, you're going to come? We've got Leeds this week. You're going to come and see it? Big game. Oh, we'd love to, but you know, your mother's a bit tired, so we're probably going to stay for El Clasico. You know, the following weekend, we'll probably stay here this week." You could see a lot of that, couldn't you?
You know, you've got Joe, but still a teenager, I believe, on the other end of the phone, going, "Well, you know, we've got the Bridges. It's a shopping centre. It's really nice. You know, over 60% of the units do have shops in them still. So, you know, we've got that. The Silver Link. Oh, really good McDonald's at the Silver Link. What else is there? Not much. To say the least.
Well, you know, flight. We looked at flights are a bit pricey this time of year, so the prices have all jumped up. We'll look at it again in January, shall we?
Yeah. Oh, Penshaw Monument. Yeah, lovely, lovely place. Great to go and walk the dogs. Yeah. Mom, Dad, you still there? Yeah. And the line cuts off. Yeah. But yeah, no, hope he doesn't have a blinder against Leeds, basically, is the long and short of it.
Well, now that you've besmirched him and his entire family, he's probably going to score a hat trick. But fingers crossed he does not.
You can say, you know what, at the 2034 World Cup or something, when the two brothers are playing alongside each other for England, you can sit there with your walking stick and say, I was there at the Stadium of Light when Job Bellingham scored a hat-trick against Leeds. So
yeah, I do like and I was there. Like, obviously, I was the one who spotted Shea Adams when he was playing for Ilkeston. I mean, not the one of us who spotted Shea Adams when he was playing for Ilkeston. I'm trying to think of any. Jamie Vardy at Stocksbridge, obviously another one. Jude Bellingham. I was very quick to spot him when he scored against Leeds for Birmingham City in the Championship.
You know who you're starting to sound like?
Go on.
You start to sound like Victor.
Yeah, Jude gave me the feeling I got watching Jude Bellingham score against Leeds was the same feeling I got watching a young
Steven
Damien,
Gerrard.
Watching a young Damien Johnson play for Northern Ireland. also played for Birmingham. That ties in quite nicely. Yeah, I mean, you say that, but they've got their work cut out to play ahead of Jordan Henderson in that World Cup, I would say.
Yeah. They do. That's very, very witty of you. How old will Jordan Henderson be then? In his 40s, 45, I think he'll be.
Yeah.
So
still holding the pace down the Southgate side.
He can probably still play at 45 in the Saudi league, given the pace that it is over there. But yeah, anyway, before we get on to geopolitical issues again, let's keep it light. Let's keep it whimsical. Let's keep it Christmas. Yeah, hopefully we'll have some more wins to report on and discuss next week on the Inside Elland Road pod. But that's it for this week. Graham, any parting comments as usual?
I cannot believe we didn't have an entire section devoted to Patrick Bamford's hair. I cannot believe that we've gone for 1 hour talking about Leeds United and we haven't mentioned the biggest talking point from the game. I mean, that's a shocking omission from us.
I just thought that a man of, you know, a follicularly challenged man as yourself maybe wouldn't want to discuss hairstyles.
Oh, I wasn't going to criticise. I'm certainly in no position to criticise. People in glass houses shouldn't throw combs. But it was... I don't think I've ever heard a stadium gasp like Elland Road gasped when he took his hat off. It was... The noise around Elland Road was incredible. Like 36,000 people at once feeling the same emotion. And a completely random emotion for a football game. Yeah, just incredible scenes, really. I'd love to delve into the whys and the wherefores. You know, did he just suddenly fancy a completely dramatic change at the age of 30? Or is there something more Leeds United-y behind it? Because he's not the first this season to have bleached his hair. Clyson's been at it. Matteo Joseph. I want to say that he's...
Yeah, Matteo has.
He's been at it. I feel like we're missing one as well. But I can't quite bring it to mind. But there have been a few this season who have bleached their hair. Maybe it's some sort of team forfeit that we're not privy to. Or maybe his barber just said, you know, do you fancy a change? And he thought, you know, why not? Yeah, remarkable scenes. True. I talk about an I was there moment. You know, I was there.
The peroxide moment, yeah. I mean, it isn't outside the realms of possibility that at the time that Bamford took his hat off, the Leeds United Christmas advert was being beamed on the big screen. And just as the actress takes the zips off the sort of the hoodie to reveal the Leeds United shirt, that's why everyone was maybe gasping, because they were, oh, she does still love Leeds. Oh, thank God. And that's maybe what they were gasping at.
The plot twist, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Hey, we can discuss Patrick Bamford's hair next week if you want, because you know what? He might score a header. And then it's going to be sort of the Samson story in reverse, if anyone's familiar with the Bible.
So it will be a white Christmas after all, is what you're saying.
Oh, see, there you go. Right. Save that for your column. Save that for your verdict. Right, this has been the Inside Elland Road podcast with myself, Joe Donoghue, and your YEP chief football writer, Graham Smith. Thank you for tuning in once again, and we'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.